BFM.
It's time for What's Up with the Leader of the Opposition, Chris Hipkins.
Morena, Chris Hipkins.
Good morning, how are you?
Yeah, good, mate. First and foremost, thanks for jumping on the phone with us this morning. What we're going to start with is this new $12 billion boost to New Zealand's military spending as part of a new defence capability plan. The national government, facing rising global tensions, aims to strengthen the New Zealand Defence Force, which has, I think it is fair to say, has been underfunded for the last few decades. The plan includes funding for various projects such as replacing maritime helicopters, upgrading software, and investing in new equipment like drones and uncrewed boats. Given the significant $12 billion boost to military spending, $9 billion of which is new spending, which aims to be spent over the next 4 years, do you believe that this level of investment is the right approach to address New Zealand's defence needs?
Well, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how the government stacks this up in terms of real money, because you've got Nicola Willis today basically saying that, you know, the government's effectively going to be cutting spending at a time when she's saying that in areas like defence they want to increase spending, and it's hard to see how they're going to actually make those two things reconcile. I think, you know, issues around drones and so on, it's only a very small component of the spending signalled in the capability plan. Much of the other spending is stuff that the country actually does need to be able to do things like disaster recovery, search and surveillance, those things that New Zealanders rely on our Defence Force to do. They're struggling to do that with the amount of equipment and the personnel that they've got at the moment. So we are going to need to invest in those things. So I don't think anyone wants to see a situation where now, New Zealand couldn't contribute to a disaster response in the Pacific, for example, because our Defence Force just didn't have the capability to do it.
Now, there's mention of the increasing global tensions as a driving factor for this boost. How do you view New Zealand's role in the international security landscape, and do you think this increase in spending is aligned with our global responsibilities?
I think we need to be eyes wide open to the fact that we're living in a more volatile world. But for New Zealand, diplomacy should always be our first port of call. I don't think anyone wants to see a massive international arms race. And so I don't think we should buy into that kind of rhetoric. I think in terms of our defence capability, it should be based on what we think our Defence Force needs in terms of its long-term capability to do the things that we expect of it. So New Zealand has a role to play in things like peacekeeping operations around the world, very consistent with our independent foreign policy to do that. But we've also got a response and responsibilities in areas like search and surveillance, rescue and recovery, disaster response. So, you know, the Southern Ocean is right on our back doorstep. We've got significant international responsibilities there, and we do need Air Force and maritime capability in order to be able to meet those responsibilities. So I think we've got to focus not on defence capability spending in response to just the current political environment, you know, geopolitical environment. We've got to focus on what the country needs long term.
With the current economic challenges facing Aotearoa, such as the big three, like housing, health and education, do you think it's sustainable to prioritise such a significant increase in military spending?
I don't think it's sustainable to cut government spending in the way Nicola Willis is without jeopardising those things like health, education and housing. I think we do need to spend money on our defence capability, but I think what we're about to see, I think in this year's budget, is that the government have got the trade-offs all wrong here.
I mean, how do you balance defence spending with other vital areas like healthcare, education and infrastructure?
Well, you have to do both. And the reality is I don't think the government are going to do enough of the other. And, you know, we're waiting to see what's in this year's budget. But the announcements from Nicola Willis today that she's actually going to be reducing the amount of funding set aside for, you know, extra costs in health and education and housing and so on, doesn't bode well.
Given New Zealand's history, it's also fair to say, I'd say, we've had very fluctuating defence spending. Do you think it's a proposed 2% of GDP target for military spending is realistic, or do you foresee challenges in maintaining this level of funding in the long term?
I think a defence force spending for a small military like New Zealand's is always going to fluctuate a bit, because in the years when you buy significant new equipment, then your defence spending is going to spike, and then it's going to drop down again. So when we bought the new Orion replacements, when we replaced the Hercules, we saw a short-term spike in spending there, but then it fell down, you know, it dropped back down again. And I think The defence capability plan that the government have released is likely to see similar sort of spikes followed by declines.
And now, one last question on this one. With New Zealand's location in the Pacific, how do you think the proposed military enhancements will affect our relationships with our other Pacific neighbours and contribute to regional security?
Well, as I said, I think, you know, our Pacific neighbours do look to New Zealand in areas like disaster response. You know, they're subject to more natural disasters, more significant severe weather events. New Zealand's played a leading role in supporting Pacific countries, and we need the capability to do that. But our Defence Force also played a role in other areas, like vaccination following COVID-19 in the Pacific. The New Zealand Defence Force was actively engaged in making sure that the Pacific could get access to those vaccines because of the logistics involved in doing so. So I think, you know, our Pacific neighbours do want to see New Zealand continue to play a lead role in those areas.
Now, moving along to the National Government's Family Boost policy, which was intended to help with childcare costs. Since it was set out in detail in National's back pocket boost paper, they estimated that this payment for childcare would assist an additional 130 households with young children in Aotearoa. In fact, only about 56,000 have actually received the rebate, and very, very, very few families, only 249, received the maximum benefit. Do you believe the low uptake of the Family Boost policy highlights a fundamental flaw in the National Government's approach to addressing cost of living pressures?
Oh, let's be clear. National's back pocket boost during the election campaign was a total fraud on the New Zealand people. They basically made promises that they couldn't stack up. Christopher Luxon repeatedly said during the election campaign that families with kids were going to get $250 a fortnight under National. Now it turns out that they'd be lucky if there were 250 families who were going to get that. The truth is, you know, they didn't do their numbers right. I think all the economists were telling them that their numbers were wrong and they were ignoring them. Remember Nicola Willis and Christopher Luxon faced with all this criticism saying, well, we know numbers and everybody else is wrong. Turns out they didn't know their numbers. They got them wrong. And now we're seeing the consequences of that, which is that people aren't getting what they thought they were voting for.
Do you think National's alleged overselling... Do you think National's alleged overselling of the Family Boost policy during the election campaign amounts to misleading the public?
Oh, it's total fraud on the New Zealand public. They made promises they had no intention of keeping, and now we're seeing the consequences of that.
Now, how would Labor redesign a childcare support policy to avoid both the administrative issues seen with the Family Boost payment and the payment errors that occurred under your government's cost of living payments?
Well, we had made a decision to extend free early childhood education to two-year-olds. So at the moment, there's 20 hours a week free for 3- and 4-year-olds. And we were extending that to two-year-olds. Now, it's ironic that the National Party cancelled that extension to two-year-olds in order to put that money into this failed scheme instead. So what that means is if you're a family with a two-year-old, you're actually financially significantly worse off under this government.
Now, National's considering changes to the Family Boost scheme post-budget. What specific adjustments would you recommend to make it fairer and more accessible?
Well, I think making early childhood education just free up front saves all of the bureaucracy, all of the compliance costs, and that was what we were doing, and I think that was a much better way of delivering support for families.
And now, Sorry, Chris, my headphones are playing up. Either it's the headphones or the microphone here. The New Zealand government has announced a new plan to accelerate building projects by including a self-certification scheme for approved building firms. Plumbers, drain layers, and I think electricians, isn't it? Under the changes, qualified professionals will be able to sign off on their own work without needing building consent authorities to approve building consents or conduct inspections for simple residential dwellings. Do you support the idea of self-certification for builders?
I think self-certification in some circumstances can be a positive thing, and it could help to reduce time delays and all of those sorts of things. But we've got to be careful here. I think the last thing we want to see is another leaky buildings debacle, where where homes end up being built that can't withstand the rigors of what they're required to do, and then by the time we figure that out, the people who are responsible are long gone.
I mean, yeah, if we are removing this oversight from building consent, isn't it more likely that this is going to happen? We will be revisiting a leaky building scenario?
Well, I think that's the risk that we've got to make sure we don't allow that to repeat. So any self-certification has to be risk-based. So for low-risk activities, sure. For high-risk activities, a little more sceptical there.
Now, the national government is claiming the scheme, this particular change, will initially result in 3,000 more homes being built each year. Do you believe this target is realistic?
Oh, I think they're just plucking figures out of thin air at this point. I mean, I think, yep, sure, if self-certification can result in more homes being built, that's a good thing, but I think it's a bit too soon to be predicting success yet.
Yes. All right. Hey, Chris, one last question for you this morning on this one. How would you or the Labor government balance the need to reduce building costs and delays with the need to maintain strong safety and quality assurance in residential construction?
As I said, I think any self-certification needs to be risk-based. So for low-risk activities, we're very open to that. But for higher-risk activities, you've still got to have checks and balances in place there.
All right. Hey, Chris Hipkins, leader of the Labor Party, thank you so much for chatting to us this morning. We'll look forward to catching up with you soon, mate.
No worries. Good as gold.
Cheers, dude.
That was What's Up with Leader of the Opposition, Chris Hipkins.